Hello, welcome to Startup Out of the Box, a weekly podcast about startups with Vitor Domingos and Marco Silva.
This week we're going to be talking about management, tools that startups can use, and a bit of the bro culture in Silicon Valley.
Exactly. So let's start with the first theme, which is tools for managers.
No, management.
Management.
tools are the second one.
You're right. Oh, this is gonna be good, this episode. So about management, right? Yeah. So one of the things that I think we both had when we worked for a previous startup company, mm-hmm. I'm not going to name the country, but it was in the middle of Europe with a lot of snow. One of the things that, at least I noticed, is that there's a lot of managers that they think that they can manage, but actually they can't. Which brings me then to the second theme, and they start to use tools just to cover their mistakes of doing a bad management and not having management skills, and they rely a lot on tools, on processes, on systems to support their bad management skills at all.
They think that management is just a part of the job of just keeping track of what people are doing, and they don't realize that management, it's about the people and the tasks. What are the things that people are working on? It's not the most important thing. That's the second nature of being a manager.
Exactly, because if you just look at the task list that you have to do and the emails that you have on your inbox, anyone can be a manager, right? Yeah. Anyone can manage that. Anyone can manage a bunch of tickets and can assign tasks to people and to groups and whatever.
Or to micromanagement.
Exactly, that's kind of micromanagement kind of thing. But management, as you said, is about people. I understand the people that work for you and that you work with as mm-hmm. well. I understand have a deep understanding of their background, of their experience, and how can you rely on them to complete the task and complete the work that you have in hand.
Yeah, to achieve the business goals.
Exactly. So it's just to support them and not actually micromanage them. And I think that's a lot there right now in a lot of startups. There are a lot of people that actually look at micromanaging people rather than look at the big picture, mm-hmm. take a step behind and try to figure out how actually people can work and how can they work together. That's the kind of the difference that I saw back when we worked at startup in the middle of Europe. I saw a lot of that kind of micromanagement. But you work right now at a startup. How do you do things on your side?
So on our side, we talk quite frequently. We use one of your favorite tools called Jira.
Amazing.
I know you have a hate relationship with it, but I think that's a tool that gets a really bad rep because of bad managers. Bad managers just like to use ticketing systems, and one of the most famous ones is Jira, as a way to control what people are doing, how much time they took to do it, mm-hmm. What's their workload, things like that, and they realize and for them, those number of tickets and tasks that you perform, that's the real metric. It's not the value of the work, not the quality of the work. They just rely on how many tasks did you do this week, how many points or hours did your work take this week, and they just rely on that metric for management. Mm-hmm. On our side, we use Jira as a ticket board. Yeah, we put all the tasks that we think about, that we talk about, we put it there just to keep track. What do we need to work in the future? What are we working on this week? But it's a step. It's just like a way to keep track to it. Mm-hmm. It's a bit complex comparing to other tools like Trello or Asana. But it's a tool that was also used Confluence as the wiki and GitHub. It does some nice integrations. And it's a tool that most of us already know how to use based on previous experiences. Right. And if we want to go a bit more complex, we can use that complexity if we need to. But we don't use it as what is everyone working on this day or that hour. That's why we hire people. That's to, because we trust them. They have the skills that we think they need to do with the job in hand. So we don't have to micromanage them.
Well, you know, I think that comes with experience, right? Mm-hmm. Because probably when you start working, how old were you? Around, I don't know, 23, 24,
25?
Right. So So if you're just a young graduate, you just come out of school and you start working, you don't have enough experience to actually understand what management is on both sides, yeah. Right? So you don't know how to manage your workload, and you don't know how to manage your relationship with your manager. So it's a learning experience that you need to do. The thing is, there's a lot of people that don't have that experience. They'll rely on the tools to support that lack of experience, and everything then goes wrong. Because as I said, as you get older, you get that kind of experience, and because you know how to manage your work, you know how to manage your workload, you can work remotely, you can work on an open space on your company, and it doesn't matter because you manage, most of your management work is done by you, not by your manager. Mm-hmm. The manager is just there to make sure that you are actually focused on the tasks that you need to do and focus on the goals that you need to achieve. Otherwise, you just do whatever you... Well, I'm not saying that you do whatever you want to do, but you know what you need to do because you have tools that can support your work, your workload, but you don't need a lot of management support to continue to do the work. And what I see on a more enterprise level is that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of people that actually work remotely. They need to manage their current workloads. They don't, at the company that I work for, most of our management tool is either email and Excel and PowerPoint. So anytime we need to do something, we do that on a PowerPoint. Anytime we do any kind of calculation, we do that on Excel. And we use and rely on email a lot to delegate stuff. And then people actually know what they need to do. I know how many projects I have in hand, what's the deadline, what's the things that I need to deliver. Mm-hmm. And I manage myself. I don't have micromanagement on top of me. Do you think that startups are relying on a lot of tools to support the management work, or do they actually need someone more experienced within the company mm-hmm. to tell them how to probably do this and support them?
Well, if you're just starting, something basic as an Excel spreadsheet would be, for most startups, is more than enough. Just go Google spreadsheet, share it between your team. Just put the list of tasks that you know that everyone needs to work on or people can agree on, and there you go. That's the most basic task list that you can create. If they need someone with more experience, I would say you will need to rely on that once the team grows up to a certain level. Hmm. So once you're like 3 or 4, everyone is maybe in the same room or is in the same chat during the day, they can rely it very well between them because they're always talking about the same issues, everyone. Mm-hmm. Once the team starts growing, then some people are working on one project, other part of the team is working on a different project. Mm-hmm. So it already gets to a point where, okay, maybe you need someone to help understand where everything is going, how everything is fitting together, mm-hmm. but also ensuring that everyone still keeps talking. So I would say after a certain level, maybe like 15 people, that's when someone that has a bit more experience ought to manage stuff can come in. But also, I know some cases of some startups that grew slowly in the beginning, and the people that were there from the beginning started to realize this is the best way that we found for it, and it works for us. So and it works. So they don't need to get anyone else from outside to do it because they like the way they work. So
and how do you see, as a startup that has a lot of remote workers, how do you see that actually working on a kind of a more management level?
In the beginning, it's tricky. It's difficult. Comes to a point of the confidence, maybe. When you're in the same space, the same office, so now used to manage a previous team, we were around 8, all in the same area. So talking between us, it was always a daily thing, every 10 minutes, or you would just like move your, come here, I need some help, come next to me. So we would have more interaction face-to-face, and we humans, we like that interaction face-to-face, body. We can analyze what people are doing. Are they reacting? Once you go remote, you have to rely much more on confidence on the people, mm-hmm. And your communication needs to improve tenfold, 100 times has to be much better.
So it needs to be more clear about the things that you need to achieve and things that you need to do.
Yeah, you need to be much more explicit than implicit. You can't think about, oh, they already know about this. No, make sure people know about it because we're in remote locations. So you have to ensure that everyone knows what's going on. So we use Slack as our communication tool, and we have different channels depending on what we're talking about, if it's engineering, if it's design or client management.
So what happened 2 days ago? No one had Slack, right? As I remember.
Oh, yeah. We just continued as normal. So
you just call and you just use...
No, we just... No, we just continue work. That doesn't affect us that much because we know that we have Slack if we need to, and we chat when we need some help. If we needed help from someone else and Slack is not working, well, we have Google Hangouts, we have Skype, we have Facebook.
Yeah.
But the thing is, for us, it doesn't really affect us. We just continue work.
Do you guys use a lot of video to do the kind of meetings that you have, or just use audio?
We do every week we do... regular meetings with everyone in the company, and we use Google Hangouts for that. And there it's a matter of, yeah, some people have the video on, some don't, and we do use a lot of the Google video and Google Hangouts video also for presentations. Every week at Friday, we have someone in the team do a presentation of whatever they want, so something that they were working on or something that they're learning about. So we use a lot of video also between us.
On my side, on a more corporate level, we use a lot of audio, period. So we use Skype pretty much for everything. We don't use any kind of, we use Skype for chatting, but most of our chat comes from the emails because we can have that kind of tracking between who's going to send what, who's going to send what they need to send, and who said what. But also, with Skype, we have a lot of Skype calls. So it's easy for us to, if I need to talk to you, I can schedule a call on Skype. We can talk for 10, 15 minutes. It's going to be easier than 3 or 4 back and forth emails between us. So we rely a lot on Skype to manage ourselves and to manage others. So anytime I need to talk to someone within my team, either here in EMEA or other regions, I rely on Skype. I just give them a call. We can have presentations. We can show PowerPoint. We can share screens. That's how we do most of our most of our things.
Yeah. Well, we're lucky compared to you. Like for us, we are all almost in the same time zone. Maybe 1 hour more and 1 hour less.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the same. It's the same time zone. So talking then about time zones also, how do you work with people like in the United States or Asia?
Well, that's complicated because when we started to do this podcast today, I told you that I'm going to have a couple of calls around 4 p.m. UK time, which means that it's going to be around 9-ish something in the morning in the United States. That's why. So that's why how we do things. It has it has one disadvantage and one big advantage. Let's start with the advantage is when you work with people from Asia, like India and China and Australia, it's really good to rely on them because they can work whilst you're sleeping. So if you need to delegate something, you can delegate to them because on the next day, when you wake up, you already have most of the stuff done, which is really good. But if you rely on, a director from the United States, that's really complicated to deal with that because he's only available after 4 p.m., 3 p.m. your time. Then at 5, no one's in the UK works, so it's really complicated. The guy is still, someone is going to have a call with him at 8 p.m., at 9 p.m. here, so it's really complicated to deal with that part of the world. I really like working with Asia and with the APAC region rather than the States region. So, but here in EMEA, we're pretty much around the same time zone, so +1, +2. And that's really good for us. We don't have that much of a hurdle here in EMEA. But still, we rely on Skype to do those kind of calls, which is kind of different. We do one yearly event to meet for everyone to meet in one location within in the world. We join everyone. We put everyone together from all regions so that they can meet and they can be together once in a year. How do you do your meetings? So you have a bit of team. Well, your team is in Portugal. Yeah. You live in the UK. You usually go there and meet them, right?
Yeah. So our team is split between three countries: Switzerland, me, the UK in London, and the rest of the team in different areas in Portugal. So every couple of months we get the entire team together. So we fly the team to Switzerland, me and whoever's in Switzerland goes to Portugal, and we try to move everyone like south of Portugal or Lisbon. We pay for the tickets, the hotel, everything. So we do that every couple of months because, well, it's in EMEA, so we don't
need it.
And even so, like whenever I travel to Portugal, I try to meet the people that are in the city where I'm traveling to. So if I go to Lisbon, I try to work with some people in Lisbon. If I go to south of Portugal, the same, I'll try to be with them, even if it's just one day. Or if I go there on vacation, I'll just take one day off to talk to be with the team in the different area because I haven't been with them for some time. Because it's good to get everyone together, or if not everyone, get the people together in the same area. And that helps when you're remote because you're not relying only on chat. You're relying also on, well, your new human nature of creating bonds and relationship with people. And that's when you're a small startup, that's really important because you depend on each other to do this. When you're an enterprise and you have like 200, 300 employees, if one of them doesn't like you or he leaves or gets sick, there's someone else to do work. Or there's somebody, if we would work together and if I don't like you, well, there's someone else in the company that I can talk to and get the job done. But if you're in a startup and you're just like 10 people,
you need to get together, you have to work to get along.
Yeah, you have to create that bond between everyone. I think that's where most managers fail. Yeah.
Well, I think I also got that experience by working on different startups and having my own startup. Actually, when I had my own startup, we were pretty much everyone at the same office back in Lisbon. We were together all the time. Mm-hmm. We worked closely. We didn't have any kind of remote because we wanted to have that kind of culture of being together, working together, knowing what are you doing, what am I doing, and try to, I wouldn't say control, but have that kind of openness between everyone and so that we can see what we were doing. Which brings me to I'm not going to talk about tools for managers.
Yeah, because I think
we already talked about that. And after all, that was our main theme, first theme.
it touches a lot of points, like how can you be a bad manager?
Exactly.
And
well, we can tell that. Well, I'm not going to tell the story because I have a blog post about Jira is the tool for bad managers. We can discuss that in a later podcast. But brings me to the culture, right? The broad culture that is actually it's pretty much, I won't say on every single startup, but it gets really easy to get that kind of culture in startups.
Yeah.
Having that kind of bro culture where people are just getting along. We have this closed group, no one joins, and if you're a girl or if you are someone from another gender, you don't get in because you don't do the same things. You don't go to the pub to have drinks. If you don't like coffee and you're in a startup that everyone drinks coffee, you're doomed. If you don't like alcohol, you're doomed as well. If you don't play ping pong or table tennis, you're just pretty much excluded.
Well, I had a good example 2 weeks ago, maybe. Someone I know that works in a startup, they have every week, Fridays, drinks in the office, beer. So everyone, Friday afternoons, there's beer, everyone drinks, everyone gets happy, the usual. But this guy, for example, he likes to drink tea.
Mm.
And the boiler had stopped working,
mm-hmm.
So we went to the HR department. Like, yeah, the boiler
complained about that.
Yeah, that's broken. Like, can we order another one? Like €20 and £20. We can get the new one. And I got like, yeah, we need to see about the budget. And he was like, what? You just spend like $100 every week to buy beer. And you're talking about something that's cost €20 and you don't know if you have budget for this.
Yeah,
that really explains a bit of the culture going on. So they focus more on the beer side and the alcohol, but then people that don't want the alcohol or don't want the beer.
Well, to be honest with you, I have I don't have a pretty much straightforward opinion about that. I think that if you're in a startup and you have that kind of culture of having drinks after work mm-hmm. or going into parties. Well, that's it, right? So you're just a newcomer to the company. Either you adapt to them or either you start your own thing yeah. in the company, right? Maybe you can find someone that actually doesn't like to go to parties, doesn't like to drink alcohol, and you get along with someone that actually just wants to have tea yeah. after work and play board games and that kind of stuff. Or don't do anything with that, because as you get older, you get responsibilities outside of the work, like kids, like stuff, and someone plans a party after 5 on a Friday and you actually can't go mm-hmm. because you have kids. You yep. need to pick them up on from school. You need to go with to your family mm-hmm. or you need to go with on a weekend to something. So you don't have that kind of flexibility. Yep. So I see that kind of bro culture as a thing that either you need to adapt or you can start your own thing within your own company. Right. But it gets really complicated as you get older, because you don't have the same flexibility as young people have to do this kind of thing. Should it be regulated? Should it be considered? Should we do something about it? I don't have a straightforward opinion about that.
I think there's like a lot of levels into that. So one would be one of the layers. If we talk about the drinking and the alcohol and the parties, for me, a company that has a good culture, it doesn't matter if you don't go to the pub or to the night outs with the rest of the company because you have something else to do, and everyone just keeps working together. They're happy to be together. But yeah, some people like to do one thing. Some people like to do others. Mm-hmm. I've seen in some startups, like if you don't go with them or even companies, if you don't go with them to the company retreat or to the night outs or to the pubs, something like that, you are excluded from the company because, oh, you want to come with us because you think you're better than us. Mm-hmm. So I think that's already a sign of a dangerous culture when everyone must do the same thing and there's no space for someone who wants to do something different. Mm-hmm. I think that's already a sign of there's something wrong here. That's well more generic. Then if we move to the part of gender, I think that's then a different conversation that's to take place. Regulated, like everything, I don't think that's something that has to be regulated. I think that's something that has to be more with culture and education.
Well, that's kind of common sense, right?
Well, we would say that, but for example, when I talk to my wife or my mother and my sister, they work in environments that are considered like corporate environments where people have degrees and higher education, things like that. But they keep following every day. They might have a story of something that happens to them.
Yeah.
And it's something that they look like, wait, this is 2017. Why is that still happening? Because it comes to the part of culture-wise.
Yeah.
Culture-wise, it's accepted that those things can happen.
Mm.
And you have, like one of the articles that shared about the bro culture in Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the lines where...
That's what we're going to share, the one yeah. from Vanity Fair. Yeah.
One of the lines that the author mentions there, it's they allow it to happen. So we're talking about the relationship between men and women and sexual harassment, things like that. The guy's excuse was, well, they allow it to happen.
Hmm.
He didn't realize, okay, just because they allow it to happen doesn't mean that it should happen. Maybe the guy should have a different perception of reality, like, yeah, okay, they might allow it to happen, but this is not the right thing to do. Mm. So I think there's a lot of culture-wise that needs to change, starting from the kids. I remember a story a couple of months ago of a party artist that makes drawings for kids, like their faces, yeah. something like that. And she was mentioning how she, like a little boy, 4 years old, came to her, and he wanted like a butterfly on his face.
And was mocked by everyone else.
The father didn't allow him to do it. They said, look, that's just for girls. You're not going to do a butterfly. And almost forced the artist to do like a skull on the boy's face. So like when you have a culture that stereotypes boys in this way.
Gender, yeah.
Yeah. Then, of course, when they grow up,
they have the
that's
same.
Their stereotype. It will continue.
Yeah, so but that's part of the bro culture, right?
Yeah.
That's the kind of the gender gap that usually some companies have.
Yeah.
There's the kind of women versus men, or the gender that
you or race or exactly. whatever. Yeah.
So that's kind of exclusion that well happens sometimes in some companies. I don't think that's a good option. Mm-hmm. I think that everyone should be treated equally. I have the kind of approach of actually I play a lot of during work. So I was raised on a more bullying kind of way. So usually that happens when I work with someone. But well, you know me. We already have our own limits, and if we just step those limits, we need to.
I think that came a bit of a culture. While we have more European culture, South European culture, it's more fun, and we know that we can make some level of jokes. In a more German culture, Germanic culture, don't really like. There's no goofing around. There's no playing around. There's no jokes.
And because we're Portuguese, we use a lot of sarcasm. Period. So yeah. If people don't understand that, that's going to be really tough to deal with. But looking at American companies. What we see is a lot of companies that actually try to, well, they're going to enforce a couple of rules because there's a lot of sexual harassment within those companies. There's a lot of gender gap also there. So what I probably foresee in the future is that actually this is going to be either regulated or is going to be pretty much well explained by HR every single week. So instead of having just a presentation about what the hell are you doing is, well, these are our rules. Please don't forget them. Like, don't let the boiler do something. Don't clean your dishes and take the garbage out. That kind of stuff within the company. Or have a clean desk policy. So it's more like an HR policy that's going to be enforced in the future. I don't see that as a good thing. I think that doing work on a startup and then we come back to the management level. The management should be lead by example.
Yeah.
So if they see something wrong happening, any kind of gap between race, gender, any kind of stuff, they should let people know that actually that's not common sense. That's not a good thing to happen. They shouldn't allow that. And if you have a bro culture in your company, well, I'm not against it. So you either adapt or you either move to another one. No one needs to work at the same company. The company needs to fit in you and vice versa. So it's both ways. And I don't see creating a company right now. I don't see that as a problem. I see more as I kind of leading by example. If I want to have moral values within my company, if I want to keep everyone happy, I need to keep them happy. So if I have someone that actually doesn't like alcohol, let's create something for him.
Yeah.
Let's not exclude him. Let's not make him feel bad, because at the end, I need his or her or whatever.
Yeah, we value that person.
The work. So if we value their work and their contribution to the startup, to the company, then we need to include them on the stuff that we do. And we need to make sure that nothing bad happens to them, either within the company or outside the company.
And even in some ways, it's simple things. For example, the Uber situation when Susan Fowler made like the big thing 6 months ago when she made like she came out about all the discrimination that happened in Uber. I remember one of the chapters, one of the paragraphs she mentioned was one of the managers got like leather jackets for everyone in the team. So it was around maybe 150 leather jackets, but for the men. Because they were mostly like standard size, something like that. But for the woman, it was around maybe, if I recall the numbers correctly, it was around 10 leather jackets. And they didn't get the 10 leather jackets for the woman because it was like, yeah, just 10 and it's too painful just to get the right size. And
yeah.
So just, yeah, you don't need it. Really? Because of 10 leather jackets?
Yeah.
Dude, put some effort, it's 5 minutes of your time and you can get 10 leather jackets.
Exactly. You need to be inclusive. You need to, because at the end, they're still your employees. You still manage them. You still need them for the work, and you need to include them with the stuff that they're actually you're doing within the company. And if you have and if you start to exclude things, well, that's what happens with bro culture, and
you get on the news
all the gaps.
Yeah, you get on the news for the worst reasons.
Exactly. So that's pretty much sums up the our time today for Startup Out of the Box. Today we're not going to have any kind of links and books recommendation, right?
Well, we have the links that we, about what we talked about during the episode.
But next episode we're going to bring one or two books and a couple of more stuff that we're going to talk about. And that was it. So Startup Out of the Box, episode number 2 with Vito Dominguez.
And Marco Silva. Yeah, at VD and at iGamer.
Exactly.
So see you guys next week.
See you.
Cheers.